Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is our second class in the going through the work from Rav Schwartz of Das Atzmacha, to know yourself. And last week we gave a bit of an introduction of talking about the two ways of serving God, starting from God and what's our service to God, versus starting from ourself and looking to find what's in it for us. And we mentioned from Rav Kook, if there is no I, there can be no he, and if there is no he, there is no you. Do me a favor and just draw that shade, because the sun's going right into my eyes. Okay, that's enough. Perfect. Thanks. So, and we're discussing how people may be doing a lot of things about Judaism, but it's not really you who's doing these things in Judaism. And we have to look more towards a what's in it for me concept, and then from there we move on to service of God. That was the basic understanding of what we spoke about. We spoke about how, just like the Rambam mentioned, you can train cats to do certain things, but they really are a cat. So there's certain cat-like qualities within ourselves that we may be training ourselves, but it's not really who we are. And then the tzaddik, in the beginning of the second chapter, spoke about teaching us, sharing with us about a world that is truer than the world that we connect to right now. And how this world is more definite and clearer than the world that we're living in now. And this is the world that he wants to share with us. That's the world he wants to share with us. So we're going to get in the English, it's on page 2, the English is, does man identify with the spiritual part within him? All right, so you guys said I could read some Hebrew and translate English as I go along, so that's what we're going to do. Do you guys have a sheet? Okay, so you can follow along. We're on the second page, so we'll give out new sheets for everybody. And feel free to ask questions. I think somebody had a, Ruth, I think you had a question. You sent me over to email. But do you want to ask it or do you want to wait a little bit?
I don't think it's up to you. We can ask it now.
All right, go ahead, ask it now.
Last class, you mentioned that sometimes Balei Tshuvas will look to religion as a form of escapism.
Right.
And I asked if not observing the Torah was a form of escapism.
On the flip side. So is non-observant... Listen, people can escape in many ways. You can escape by observing Judaism, and you can escape by not observing Judaism. So one would have to reflect as to why one is doing what one is doing. And therefore, you know, it's not so simple just to say if someone's not religious, he's escaping, and if someone is religious, he's not escaping, or vice versa. So it really depends on, you know, where that person's coming from. So I think as we explain more in the class, I think the answers will become more evident. Okay? But what I was trying to say is even if somebody is observant, that can be a form of escapism. Okay, and I'll have a story to tell maybe today that will kind of describe that. Okay, so now our topic next is Ha'ima Adam Muza Imachelaka Ruchani Shabo. Is a person identifying with the spiritual part within him? So he says, Bor l'chol echad meitanu. It's clear to each and every one of us, She Adam Einenu Raka Tzomus Or Gidim Ubasar. It's clear that a human being is not merely bones, skin, sinews, and meat. Inside the person is hidden a spiritual force that gives life to the person. And kasher koach haruchani mistalik min adam adamais. When that spiritual force leaves the person dies. Okay, we all understand that? We accept that? So advarim halalu mukarim heitiv l'kum. Everybody knows this. B'shasha adamais. When a person dies, so atzamas or abasar gidim b'tchila daim kayamim. When a person dies, the bones and the flesh and the meat and the sinews, etc., in the beginning are still around. But he can't move. So what does that prove to us? What does it prove to us that a human being has got his whole body, and as soon as he dies, he can't move anymore? So what does that prove to us? Does that prove anything? Zemofes barur umuchlat shemitzios ha'adam in enorakar kavas chomer. That's clear to us. That the reality of a person is not just the component physical parts that are put together in the person. But rather, he is a reality that is combined with matter and spirit. That has to be. Because when the person is dead, he's got all the body parts. So what happened? What's missing? Something's gone out of that person. Right? The energy, the batteries, whatever you want to call it, has gone out of the person. So everybody has to agree that the human being is not totally made up of physical. Kulanu yodim esadvarim. Everybody knows this. We haven't told anything you don't know. Ella, but shizu yediyah ba'alma. But the problem is, it's only a piece of information. V'nisbonen. Let's reflect. Also, koach ruchanu shana yodim shekayam bano. This spiritual power that we know that exists within us. Also, koach achiyus apnimi shekayam bano. This power of life, inner life that's within ourselves. Here's the question: Hey, margishimanu also? Do we sense it? Chavim oso? Do we experience it? Mishtam shmito? Do we make use of it? Vimkein, if we do, b'mehau. How do we make use of, take charge of, and take hold of the spirit that's inside of us? It is right now inside of you. Is anybody taking a hold of it? B'vadei shonu mishtam shmito? We obviously make use of it. Why? Ki etzem kach shenach misnoim. Midabrim Choshim says, by the fact that we move around, speak, think, we're using that talent, aren't we? Ein zel mikocha, that only comes from the power that it's there, but the question is, aval ha'im ha'shimush shimush muda, but is our use of it a conscious use of it? Shem yodeya shemishtamish keisim koch, the person knows that he's making use of this inner force, or is he making use of it from the fact that he feels it's just a part of his physical being? In other words, what part of himself is he associating with? Is he saying, well, I feel my legs moving, I feel my brain thinking? Or do you feel the force that's behind that, that's driving that force to come about in you? Obviously, you're making use of that force. The fact that I'm walking, I'm making use of that force. The fact that I'm talking, I'm making use of that force. But I'm not consciously aware of that force that's in me. I'm not consciously aware. I'm just walking around. I'm thinking about my legs are moving. I'm thinking about, I'm speaking. I'm not conscious of that force that is in me. So the force is operating, but am I conscious of that force? That's the question. Right, Ledugma, for example, Adam Halech, a person's walking. Pavadishu Halech, probably. He's going with his legs. Ahore Ragraim Levade, and he calls it Leches. But legs alone can't make you go. Legs alone don't make you go. And the proof is, because a dead person doesn't walk. Right, so how are you walking? With my legs? Only with my legs? So it comes out at the time that the person's walking, what is driving the force to make the legs go, an inner force that's making those legs walk. So now, the question is, so when you are walking, are you identifying with that spiritual force that's there? Or it's just happening and you're not even aware of it? His legs are busy rushing him to his destination. With him reflecting how exactly that happens. Right? So what he's saying is, do you identify with the spiritual force that's making it happen or not? Right? So he says, Im adam mizdaim akoch, if a person identifies with that force, harei shekoch zanimtza etzel begilu v'hu chava oso noshem, so then that force is revealed to the person, and he experiences it, and he like breathes it. And if the person does not identify with that, he says, "Arei shebofan tivi hu chashu olechim raglaim asus basar or kidim vatzomos." He feels that physically he's doing things, but hu mizuha imachomer. But he's identifying with the physical. Vimhu mizuha imachomer. If he identifies with the physical, ha'olam apnimi aruchani nalam imenu hu einenu makiraso. That inner world is totally not recognizable. It's hidden from him. He doesn't recognize. As we said last week, you know, there was a continent called America in the 1300s. Yeah, it was around in the 1300s, and there were people living there, but nobody was aware of it. Not until 1492 do we become aware of it, or later, whatever. I don't care. But you know what I'm saying. But it's there, but you're not recognizing it. Right? Now he says a beautiful analogy now. Alav shebavadi hu mamim bekiyumo, even though he believes, you may believe that it exists. And scientists may call it something else. But they all agree that there is something spiritual that exists. And you know it's there. Aval domahu la'adam sheishlo babayis kaspas v'socha $1 million. It's like a guy who has a safe in his office, and inside's $1 million, right? But what's the problem? And, you know, the family, everyone in the family is suffering and starving, and your children saying, Daddy, I would like to have something to eat. There's nothing in the cupboards. And the wife says, we really need some clothes. And the finance companies are coming after us. And the husband says, no problem. I got $1 million in the bank. But the problem is, he doesn't have the code. He doesn't have the combination to the lock. You know, we're experiencing this a lot lately. You know, all the credit card companies and all these things, it's like ridiculous. I used to have one simple code when I went to the ATM machine 20 years ago. 3433, and that was the code. Okay, now you can all get into my bank account, right? But now you can't do that anymore. It's got to be 8 characters, but they all can't be numbers and they all can't be letters. And then the second one, then there's the ID code, which has to be different than the other code. And, you know, I've had so many experiences now where I want to access into my bank account. I want to make a transaction. I want to take money out of one account, pay a bill for another account, and I can't. I can't for any number of reasons. Number one, I'm over 50 and I can't remember because, you know, you get all these other, and every different company has a different requirement of what the code can be. You know, so my 3433 that works at my TD account, that was from 20 years ago. They haven't changed it. But now my account in the States, National City Bank, no, it's got to be with letters and numbers. Still have the Cleveland account, right? And I got to remember, so finally I got smart. I said, you know, I better make a list of this in my computer. This one is this one, this one is this one, this one. But you could have the money. It's sitting in the account. You want to pay the bill. You can't pay the bill because you don't know the combination to what's going on over there. You could be very wealthy, but in reality, you don't have the ability to make use of it. Meanwhile, everyone in the family is suffering and starving, even though you're a very wealthy guy. Now, the truth of the matter is, you know, we've had, so what's this analogous to? What's this analogous to? That we all are very wealthy people. Each and every one of us in this world, in this room, is very wealthy because why? We have a buried treasure inside of us, which is our soul. And our soul is that portion of God on high that is within ourselves. The question is, does anybody know the combination to that soul? Does anybody know, a few turns to the right, a few to the left, not back to the right? And you don't know how to unlock that soul that is there and to make use of that vast wealth that's found inside of it. Now, certainly we all have it. The question is, are we learned enough to be able to make use of it? You know, you have times where let someone, we had a time when we have a code into our house to get in on Shabbos. We don't have a key to our house, we have a code. And we told people about the code, and we tell, you know, a few times about the code. And then it was a wintry day, and it was Friday night, and they went out late somewhere, and they're going to come back. We told them the code, and we went to bed. And then they come to the house, and they can't seem to remember the code. Right? And they're trying to, right? And they're freezing. And they're trying to figure out, what are they going to do? Are they going to knock on the door and wake us up and this and that? And then they maybe tried something else and that. And you can almost be freezing till you're going to get to that. So the truth of the matter is, you know, we've had the combination. And the combination, our ancestors knew the combination to the code. Our ancestors knew the combination. Somehow along the way, some of our ancestors, when they crossed Europe and they came to North America 100 years ago, some people start forgetting one or two digits and numbers to the code. And over time, it's been lost. and you've got this amazing treasure that's inside of us, and we just don't know how to open up that code. That's exactly what's going on with each and every one of us. And there's so many ways of knowing that. For example, the Midrash says, God told Moshe, that Moshe, Matana Tova Yesh Li Batzorai, I have a beautiful gift in my treasure house, and it's called Shabbos. Now, if God says it's amazing treasure, it's certainly not hyperbole. It's this amazing treasure called Shabbos, but we don't know the combination to that Shabbos. So we know it's a day off, but we still, you know, okay, so it's Shabbos, so you got to go to shul, and, you know, and we make Kiddush, and we light the candles, but still we're doing other things that really are not indicative of what the Shabbos is all about. Because the Shabbos has this inner spiritual force that's way beyond kugel, that's way beyond fish, it's way beyond even a nice davening, and many of us don't know the combination to Shabbos. It's very painful to watch people. They come and they're trying to somehow celebrate Shabbos, but it's not doing anything for them in a real substantive way. And they're just waiting for Shabbos. You know, you could tell, because those are the people that have to end Shabbos immediately at the first minute that it's possible. They're looking at the clock. They're waiting. When am I free from this jail sentence? You know, it doesn't feel like a jail sentence in the winter because Shabbos ends at 5:30. But then when Shabbos ends like last week at 9:45, he said, it's a genik shrine. It's enough Shabbos. What can I do already? I went to shul. I had a little lunch. I took a nap. It's already 6:00. I'm missing some significant basketball games. I'm missing my favorite TV programs. And what's going to be? And I was like that when I was a kid. I was very resentful of Shabbos. I was in a home where we kept Shabbos. And, you know, and in the winter, in the summertime, I missed, on Saturday nights, I would miss Flipper. You remember Flipper? Right? Flipper was amazing, right? So, and you know, in the winter, I could see Flipper. But in the summer, I couldn't see Flipper because it was Saturday night and I would miss it. It's rerun. Well, in my days, they didn't have the reruns yet. So, but it's like we're missing this tremendous gift. We're not feeling this thrill, this rush. Like it's, wow, I'm looking forward to it. It's amazing. It's the best day of the week. It's incredible. And of course, if it's incredible, you wouldn't want to sleep that much, right? If it's an amazing time, why would you want to sleep so much on Shabbos? So the quote-unquote, you know, run-of-the-mill orthodox, even orthodox understanding of Shabbos is you go to shul Friday night, you try to get the quickest minyan so you can get home and eat supper as fast as you can, have a big meal, right? And then for some of you who are tired, you fall asleep in the soup, you know? And then if you finish the meal, you get a prize and you're momish bloated and you just roll into bed at 8:00, you know? And then you tell your friends, you know, how you slept for a bagel. Right? You know what it is to sleep for the bagel? You know, if you go to sleep at 8:00, where's the hour hand on the clock? It's over here, right? At 8:00? 8:00 is here. Now, you go 12 hours all the way around. The hour hand goes all the way around. That's a full circle. That's a bagel. You slept the bagel. 12 hours. I slept the bagel. And guys, you know, in yeshiva would say, how much did you sleep? I slept 13 hours. I slept 14 hours. You know, and then you come to shul, like shul starts at 8:45, which is plenty late, and you come to shul at 10:30. Just to hear, you know, a little bit of the Haftarah, hear the rabbis talk, and make it to the Kiddush club, and then make it to the second Kiddush, and then you come back home and you're ready for lunch. Right? You're ready for lunch, you read the newspaper, you read what's going on in the world. It's very important for the Shabbos to know what's the latest ideas in Iran, in Iraq. And read some politics, and then fall asleep, and then Shabbos is over. So, like, is that the great treasure that God gave us? And people say, man, Rabbi, I love Shabbos. Out Shabbos, I couldn't function for the rest of the week. Why? Because they're just using the whole Shabbos to catch up on sleep and to gain weight. No, this cannot be the great treasure that God gave us. Is that the great treasure? So obviously there's a disconnect. Now why? It's because people are looking at Shabbos from one perspective and not from the other perspective. They're looking at it from the physical perspective. And yes, their legs are carrying them through the Shabbos, but they're not aware of the inner spirit that's within the person. So we've got the treasure, you've got the combination, you've got the lock and everything, but you don't know the combination to it. That's what he's saying. We're all wealthy without the combination. And then he continues and says, "Hayehudi b'miuchad, the Jew in particular, more than anyone else, this force, this primary force, is found in their neshama, so much stronger than other people, and the body is secondary. This spiritual force is buried inside the person, and the main thing is the person has to go with that. And that's what you have to live, and that's what you have to breathe, and that's what you have to have an awareness of, that's what you have to identify. Not to identify with the physical and the hands and the feet and the flesh and all that, but the person has to identify at every moment with the reality of the soul. And this is the critical thing, and this is what this class is going to talk about, that a Jew has to see his existence as an inner spiritual being, which enlivens his physical parts. And that's what he concludes, and he says, "Ein zeh davar kasha lias mezuim neshama." This is not a hard thing to identify with your soul. Zeh rak shinui shel tfisa. It's just a change of perception. And that's what we have to start working on, is to change our perception of who we are. Okay, and what he's going to talk about, for this was all just finishing up from last week. Now, I can quickly give this out. It's so great. The next section, he's going to give examples of what it means to have a changed perception. And what it means, a changed perception. Now, you might find these examples obvious, but the truth is, he's trying to bring home a very important point over here. And he gives a couple mundane examples, but then he gets to the real guts of the issue and showing how we're going to have to deal with this issue sooner or later in life. A lot of people say, well, you know what? I'm pretty happy being a body. I'm pretty happy being oblivious to this wonderful thing that's inside. So why you make it such a big deal, Rabbi? You know, I like my Shabbos the way it is. I like my Judaism the way it is. I like my life the way it is. But we'll see that it's not so. We'll see that it's not so. So now, the next section is called Marriage, a Change in Self-Identification. He's going to give two examples now, then setting us up for the lesson that we're really going to get out of here. So he says, we'll give a number of examples to understand the depths of these words. He says, let's picture for ourselves a single guy. Okay? So guys, or women, ladies, remember the time when you were single. If you can remember that. Or some of you are still single, so it might be easier to remember that. Okay? And while we're going to really understand tonight why there's so many problems in marriage, we're gonna see it's a problem of perception. And we will see what we mean over here. He says, let's look at a bachelor, asher kol yom avayarugal asara yom misyum, that his whole bachelor life, he's able to arrange his day in a certain way, litzur misyum eshalchaim, with a certain way of life. Huchash mishuchor kivyuchal, he feels free, as it were. Bershus asmo, he's his own guy. And Misha Koval also, there's nobody who can chain him down. He can do whatever he wants. He wants to go to this place, he can go to this place. He wants to go to that place, he can go to that place. Bishatov Bob Bibris Nasuim. So at a good, auspicious time, he gets married. Then his life takes on a whole different order. Who Meshubad Laser Connecto, he is now subjugated to his helpmate against him, his wife. All of a sudden, there's a new balabas over here. He ain't as free as he used to be anymore. Now, let's think about this. This is a change that really someone has to feel. Marriage is not just a matter of understanding that things are different. It's a feeling that things are different. He's married now and he's not in the house. He's at work. He's wherever he is. But he knows he has to be home at a certain time. The wife has supper ready at 7 o'clock. Now, he's finished work. His friend says, let's go to the bar and have a good time. Right? His secretary says, let's go to the bar and have a good time. And he knows he's got a wife and supper ready at 7 o'clock. He's not free to do what he wants. He's not single guy, can come and go as he pleases. He identifies himself as a married guy. Now, this is important. This identification will now spawn a lot of implications. But here's the key point. It's not just an intellectual understanding that he's married. He can't just say, now I check off in the column on my forms, married, check. Pick one, you know, single, married, never wants to get married, whatever, check off married. It's not just that, it's a zihui nafshi, it's an inner identification. Kishukamba boker, when he gets up in the morning, he already knows in the beginning that he can't make an appointment with somebody for drinks late at night that night. It's just not in the cards anymore. Why? Because he has to check out what's going on at home. And if he makes an appointment without making any calculations with his spouse, this, what we would call, is a person that has an emotional disorder now. If you are married and you start making appointments just offhand without consulting your spouse at all, we have major problems. Well, once a person gets married, he understands that he has to be practical. He has to know that he doesn't live alone. And his life now is beholden to recognize there's somebody else with him that lives with him in a partnership. All right. So now what's going on? What's happened to this person? Yesterday I was single. Today I'm married. I've been married for a couple of weeks. Has there been some kind of change in his life? Well, there should be. But this is where the problems can begin, as you'll see in a minute. He says, this knowledge that the person knows that he's married, no one has to tell him that he's married. He knows that fact. Are you married? Yep, I'm married. That part, you know, he can understand that alone. He understands, I got married, and I got an arrangement with a partnership with somebody that I have to contend with. Right? But this difference, he says, is in identity, how he sees himself. He doesn't need to be taught this. It's part of what he knows has happened in the fact that he has now changed his view on life now. He says, Elam etzum yediyasos adover yotzeres eslo tfis achers chaim. Now he knows this. He has to view life differently. So you see this. A real change happens. Now let's talk about this a little bit. When do marriages suffer? You know when marriages suffer? And they could be suffering from the first day. You may not realize it, that you've been suffering from the first day. Marriages suffer when either the husband or the wife or both do not emotionally change and don't identify as a different person. You have to now identify yourself as a spouse. And you are no longer a single person. And now your life is forever different. It will never be the same it was because there's different realities to life. And the same, now the problem is when a person still feels entitled to live as a single person when they are married. They want to still be the person they once were. That I still have freedom and I can still do a lot of things. Well, if you wanted freedom, then you shouldn't have gotten married. Because that's not what marriage is all about. When people want their freedom that they had before, and they want to take that freedom into a marriage, then you don't even know what a marriage is. You're trying to bring old ideas of what your life was into a new reality, which it isn't anymore. And you cannot be a good spouse if you still identify yourself as a single person. And it would be a lot better that really, truthfully, and I don't know, this doesn't happen, that when people are single, you know, they should be groomed in their youth to understand that they are going to be, in the future, spouses. They need to be groomed for that. They need to be groomed to being parents. You know, people get married and they think they're going to play house. It's not a game being married. It's not a game. It's a different reality. It is now finding your soulmate. It's now understanding that my identity is not only me, but there's another person that I identify as strongly as I identify as with myself. And I just can't do what I want anymore because there's another part of me that is part of me that I have to live with and focus on. And life has changed. So you see, it's possible that a person can change that identification. Says, I'm no longer single. I am now married. My life is different. If a person can do that, then they can make a successful transition. If they can't, then they're going to run into major problems in marriage. And that's why marriages are falling apart right, left, and center. Because people aren't getting this idea. And more than that, it gets worse now when they become parents. When they become parents. Because you think you have a kid, it means you're the same happy-go-lucky person. No siree. Being a parent is a whole different change of life. Because if you think you lost your freedom when you got married, you totally lost it now that you have a kid. When you have a kid, that's a commitment to totally give your entire existence to this child. And you have to identify with that. It can't be, I'm still free as a bird single with this kid over here. It doesn't work, especially when the kid gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning and needs attention, right? And what happens is that people then become very angry and bitter. And you can find, you know, young women who now are saddled with a couple kids and they complain, you know, I can't take it. What happened? I wish I could just be free. Because they've never really understood that there's a change of identity happening when you're committing yourself to being a parent. And you don't live that same way anymore. And there's a real, you know, one of the worst things that we had as children, when we watched those very nice cartoons and those nice childhood shows, the worst line in the world, the biggest lie in the world goes, and they lived happily ever after. Sir Lancelot swept away the princess. He beat the thugs up. He slew the dragon. They went into his palace and they lived happily ever after. And people believed it. Right? And you get married and you live happily ever after. You can, and we hope that you do, but it just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. I was single and I was lonely. Now I have company, and I'll live happily ever after. If you don't not now identify yourself as a married person and the change that has to happen, the marriage is going to be a failure, the parenting is going to be a failure, and all these things. So he's giving an example how if a person understands the change, then he can successfully identify with that. Okay, we got that? Now, there is a change, and you have to adapt to that change, and you live differently. The point he's trying to make is, you got to get it, you living differently now that you are married. Because you've got to identify yourself as a married person and not as a single person. You've got to make that change. The single person can list 10 or 15 things he can do as a single person. Now that you're married, forget it. There's new pleasures to seek out in marriage. But that old stuff, that ain't you anymore, buddy. All right. So you have to be able to make that transition. Now, why he's talking, you see, he's giving analogies to what's going to come up soon. But did you understand the point we're trying to make is you have to know to change what you identify with. When you change from single to married, you have to change what you identify with. Yeah, question? Yeah?
So does this author discuss identity from a certain perspective? Because using this vehicle of marriage, how marriage is identified in a North American culture, how it's identified in an Orthodox culture or in a secular culture or in the Amazon is radically different from what he's talking about.
Right, he's talking about a typical, we'll call typical Jewish marriage. Typical, right, from his perspective.
Typical Jewish.
Okay.
From typical Jewish, secular Jewish.
Well, let's say from. Okay, because so a lot of other people get married and they don't even know what they're doing.
So that's radically different from what's going down in a, say, reform shul and a reform.
For sure. For sure.
Are you saying that this is the universe? universal application?
No, he's just giving an example. Just this is being used as an example.
No, but this is an example.
Like and, even in a second world, you know, you got to understand there is a change in your life when you get married. Now, some places don't say that happens, and then you just have disasters. Like I said, no, they have a TV program now called Starter Marriage. Starter marriage. This is good for a starter marriage. You know, like a starter home. Starter marriage. Because, you know, then we'll move out of that marriage and move into a better marriage. You know, we just need to practice on this one. And then we'll find someone. So, like that's totally off the wall. Because these are people who are not prepared to change identification. But he's giving a standard concept, you know, single is one way of living and married is another way of living. All right, let's give the other example. And then, because I want to really get to the nimshal, to what we're really understanding is going to happen here. So then he gives a second example. He says, for example, a guy wakes up one day and he sees he's in a hospital. And he's got to be there for a couple weeks. What change does the person have to have in order to have a healthy hospital stay? So he says, first morning he gets up, in the morning he opens up his eyes, he's a little bit disorientated. And he says, where am I? What's going on here? You usually wake up and you see a common nightstand, your alarm clock, your magazines, whatever you got there, your shema, right? He says, what happened? Where am I? He says, oh yeah, I remember last night I went to sleep in a hospital. I guess I got up in the hospital, right? I don't think anybody took my bed from my house in the middle of the night and moved it into the hospital. I must have checked into the hospital for whatever reason happened. That's day one. He's a little disorientated. By day two and day three, when he gets up in the morning, he already remembers where he's at. He's in the hospital. And that means many things because there's a certain order to the day when you're in a hospital. You just don't get up and go and get into the car and drive off. Right, there's a certain identification you have to have by being in a hospital. Now, of course, you may be very upset that you've lost your freedom in the hospital. You may try to get out, but that's not going to work. The sooner you get used to being in the hospital, let them run the tests on you and do all the things they have to do, then you'll have a successful stay in the hospital. Right? So it takes a little bit of time for the person to digest this change and to recognize that he's not in his house anymore, but he's somewhere else. And therefore, there's going to be a different order to the day. So again, a person has to make that transition. You're not in the home anymore. You're in a hospital, and life is different. The reverse is also true. A person can maybe over-identify with the hospital and may never want to leave the security of the hospital and might not want to go home. That's another issue. See, these are just examples of a person changing what he identifies with. That's what he's just trying to do. Now, what this is important now is for the next section. This is the important part now. Now let's talk about the human being. And this is where it's at here. He says, this should be the next page, I believe. He says, Mitzius ha'adam murkavas mechomer v'ruach guf v'neshama. A human being is a combination of mass and spirit, body and soul. Bo'uf en tivi ha'olam oso anu makir mezua im haguf mezua mechomer. In general, people in the world recognize and identify themselves with their bodies. They identify themselves with the mass that they are. Listen to what people say. I am hungry. I am thirsty. I'm in pain. Right? Now, what part of me is feeling things? And what part am I dealing with? The physical part. Most of the things we do are very physical by nature. That reinforces us to identify our bodies as who we are. And if the littlest thing goes wrong that we didn't expect, and we don't want, like stubbing your toe, or you ask somebody for directions, and they give you the wrong directions, right? Or, something is bothering our physical identity, we get upset because we think this is the main thing. So he says that hatafkid shalanu, he says, our job, od lifnei avodah maisis, before we're going to work on doing mitzvahs as a Jew, working on our character development as a Jew, before we're going to work on being a mommy, before we work on getting married, is to identify ourselves in a different way. Lazasas asmenu kimitzius ruchanis, to identify ourselves as a spiritual being, kimitzius shel neshama, as a reality of a soul. In other words, what he's saying is, before you can start the work of being a Jew, and to maybe get any meaning out of being a Jew, you need to have a correct self-identity, which should not be based on what we physically do. Now, I would imagine everybody in this room understands and knows that they have a soul. And they probably understand how important it is to do mitzvahs. The question is, do we live in that reality? That is the real question. Do we live in that reality? Is that real to us, or is that something tacked on? Or is there a disconnect between how I feel and what I am physically? And maybe all this religious stuff is not me. Just like the young mother who may feel forced to watch the baby, but she doesn't identify herself as a mother. I'm doing the things that a mother does, but I don't identify myself as a mother. I'm doing the things that a married guy does, but I don't identify myself as a married guy. So I'm doing the things that a Jew does, but I don't identify myself as a Jew doing it. Well, the problem is you have to first know who you are. Now, what are you? Do you identify with your body, or do you identify with your soul? That's the first question you have to ask yourself. And we're going to see in a minute why this is so important. Be honest, what do you really identify with? What really makes you happy? What really makes you sad? Right. What? Well, okay, everyone will have to think. So, now he says, Eina kavana shein l'guf. We don't mean to say you don't have a body. Right? Certainly we are people with bodies. We live in this world, in the world of physical things. We don't live in Gan Eden. But here is the possibilities people have. How would you describe yourself? He says there's two nuschos, two additions of how you can identify yourself. Line one is, I am a goof. I'm a body that has a soul inside of it. Is that what you are? I'm a body with a soul inside of it. Meaning to say, my main identification is my body, but inside my body there happens to be a neshama. Is that the one way you look at yourself? Or do you look at yourself that I'm really a soul that has a garment on it called a body? And I really identify with the soul, but on top of my soul, there's a garment called a body. How do you view yourself? What do you view yourself? Which is primary? There's one is the main thing, and one isn't. So is it possible, he says, does anybody here identify with the jacket they're wearing? I am a shirt. I am a jacket. Does anybody identify with that? No, that's what I am, not what I wear. That's what I am. And then you know what happens by the time your day is over? It's in the washing machine. If I identify with myself with my fancy shirt, well, I don't know, but at the end of the day, that fancy shirt's in the washing machine, and tomorrow I'm putting on a new shirt. So is that what I'm identifying? So he says, certainly, you know, We can't say he doesn't find any identification with his clothes, because we know if you wear a nice suit, you feel something about that. It's much nicer to wear a nice suit than to wear ripped garments. You feel some kind of change in your soulful feelings. It affects you. But isn't there a big difference between saying the shirt makes me feel good as opposed to I feel that I'm a shirt? Right? I mean, and this is another one of the falsities of North America, because what does the industry say? The clothes make the man. So now what does that mean when you say the clothes make the man? What does that mean? That's who I am. Now, don't forget, that clothing will end up in the garbage one day, so I guess that's who you are too. Now, you see, this becomes very interesting. Now, are you identifying with your body or not? Because what is your body? Your body is it a garment of the soul? Or is your body what you are? And there's something inside of me. I heard about it. It's called a soul. So which one are you? Which one? Here's the question. Which one do you really identify with? You'll see in a minute why this is. It's a big difference. It's a major. It's a whole Weltanschauung difference of what you identify with. He says, if we look at ourselves as a reality, as a soul that is enclosed within a body, so then we have a vastly different identity than people identify themselves as a body that happens to have a soul inside of it. So he says, and he says, these aren't just ideas, but these are realities that we have to recognize. You can have a person that has a neshama, has a soul and a body. And just, oh yes. So, and the soul is a totally spiritual reality. The body is a total physical reality. So who of us has any doubt? He says, Hayim haguf einenu metzius muchletes. Does anybody think that the body is not a real reality here? Does anybody think, well, maybe my body isn't real? Everybody thinks the body is real. Clearly everybody thinks the body is real. So now the question is, we ask a person, do you have any doubt if the soul is a real reality? We'll say, no, I have no doubt I have a soul. I know I believe I have a soul. But if we ask the person, do you feel that the soul is a reality? So he says, here the answer is probably no, or I wish it was. But everybody feels that they're a body. 100% everybody feels their body. Everybody here, I don't really know if I feel like I'm a body. Everybody says I feel like a body. But so do you feel like a soul? I don't know. When was the last time? Did you feel any soul pains? Any soul excitement? They tell me about it. You know, Halavai, I wish I would. You know, they tell a story from Chelm. A really acute story from Chelm. A person comes to the rabbi and says, Rabbi, you know, Rabbi, I always thought that I was Yankel. You know, but today, Rebbe, I went to the mikveh. And when you go to the mikveh, like, you don't hide anything when you go to the mikveh. Like, all the guys are there, they ain't got their clothes on, and they're getting ready to go into the mikveh. He says, Rebbe, I went into the mikveh, and for a minute there, I thought, maybe I'm not Yankel. Because everybody looks the same. You know, like, no clothes, and it's all just a bunch of bodies over there. Maybe I'm not Yankel. Rebbe, how do I know that I'm Yankel? So Rebbe, the Chelm Rebbe thinks, it's a good question. I'm not sure. I'll tell you what you could do. Here, I got this beautiful red string. Tie it around your ankle. Keep it there at all times. And when you go to the mikveh, you may not have any clothes on, but you look down, oh, there's a red string. I'm Yankel. I know that I'm Yankel. And that worked for a couple of weeks. It was really great. The Rebbe was really a genius. Now I know that I'm Yankel because I got the red string. So then one day, Yankel comes back to the Rebbe in a panic. It's terrible. What happens, happens. Rebbe, it was good for a while. But this morning I went to the mikveh and I looked down and my red string was off. It was off. And I look across and I see my red string is on somebody else's ankle. So I went to the guy and I said to the guy, Rabbi, I know who you are, but can you tell me who I am? Okay. So here's the point. What's the point of the story? Most of us identify ourselves by the red strings that we wear. And what kind of red strings that we wear? It could be anything. It could be the kind of job I have, the kind of weight I weigh, the kind of clothes I wear, the kind of company I keep, the kind of car I drive. And that becomes our identity. And that's like the red string. But the question is that our real identity? Or is it just a false illusion of what identity is? Right? So when you really say to yourself, do I have a body? Yes. Am I a body? Yes. Am I a soul? The rabbi told me I am. Do you feel that you're a soul? I wish. I wish I felt I was a soul. Now, here's where the frightening difference comes. So I say, well, I'm just saying a lot of words right now. But this becomes very, very real, very practical. Let's continue now. We're going to learn a mystical concept called Chibut HaKever. What exactly happens after a person dies? It seems every Tuesday I've been at funerals lately, so it's like, what happens after a person dies? Right? So what he is going to say now is that we've talked about going through changes in identity. You can change your identity from being a single person to a married person. And guess what? Changes in identity are painful. It is really painful to become a good spouse. Now, it doesn't have to be a painful pain, but it's painful. It's a change. It is painful to get used to being in a hospital. Right? It's painful. But the sooner you get used to it, the sooner you'll make the most of it. Right? So now the question is, how painful is it to realize that you are a soul and not a body? And will that pain ever happen in your life? And you'll say, nah, I don't have to worry about it. I'll always identify as being a body. And as long as I identify as being a body, everything will be fine. Well, I'm sorry, it's not going to work out that way. And he's going to explain. He says, really, essentially, everyone is going to have to make this change in identity. When a person dies. Because what happens when a person dies? When a person dies, the soul leaves the body. The soul leaves the body. And you see that red string drifting away. That red string is drifting away. Because you see, there's a problem. Who have you been identifying with most of your life? You've been identifying yourself as this body. I'm hungry, I have to eat. I'm bored, I have to watch a basketball game. I have to go to work and make some money. It's all body talk. It's all body talk. And we spend a whole lifetime talking about the body. And it could be all kinds of things. You know, you could be an intellectual. It's still the body. It's still the brain. I read the New York Times. It's body talk. I read scholarly articles. It's still body talk. Even if I keep Shabbos, it's just my body going through the Shabbos. And we're spending our whole lives identifying as bodies. Now, what's going to happen on the day you die? What happens to your identity? He says, "Hulo yachol lizol," says Asakuf. You can't identify yourself as a body anymore when you die, can you? Because what happened to your body? It's lifeless. There's no reality anymore. It doesn't exist anymore. Right? Now, you've been identifying with your body all this time. You're in for a heck of a surprise. He says, if you're waiting to die for this change to happen, he says, "Atalichim shel shinui zeh hem talichim koshim." The process of this change of identity is a very hard process. And our rabbis call this, the mystical meaning is called chibut hakever. Literally it means beating in the grave. The rabbis talk about, and I will spare you the mystical descriptions because they're horrifying. And I'm not here to scare you into anything. But if you read certain Kabbalistic works, what happens to the human being when he dies in relation to the body, it's like horrific changes that scare the living daylights right out of the person. I will spare you the graphics on that. But we're going to explain just in a simple, logical way what he's talking about over here. And we have to remember, are people excited for change? No. Do people like transitions? Do people like starting new jobs? Moving into a new house? Making new friends? Don't like doing that at all. Well, and you know, and we'll do anything we can to avoid having to do that, won't we? Like, if you don't want, you're afraid to go in an elevator, you'll make sure to change your whole daily schedule to make sure that you won't have to be in a place that's got an elevator you have to go up to. Anything but going through that change. But here, when a person dies, you ain't got a choice. And now he's going to explain this concept of chibut hakever. What does it mean, this expression, the beating of the grave? He says, Shinui hazihu shel hanefesh hiyusrim l'ben adam. This change of self-identification is one of the greatest sufferings that a human being goes through in their death time. Can't say lifetime anymore. V'nitein dugma pshut, I'll give you a simple example. We talked about the guy who was single and then he got married. Right? So this change, anybody who's been through it, it could be a relatively pleasant change with some difficulties. And it can happen within a relatively quick time with mature people, obviously. Mature people, they can get used to the changes that are involved. I don't know how true that is nowadays, but let's assume so. Now he gives us a different example. He says, but this change is much more challenging. And he gives one more example. How about a woman who's married to a man for, let's say, 50, 60 years? Okay? Then all of a sudden the husband dies. Okay? So is the change of her identity going to be easy? Why is it not going to be easy? Because all she knows is to be a married woman. All she knows is to have supper ready for her husband. All she knows is that that's the person who keeps me company. If any of you have dealt with elderly parents and one spouse predeceases the other, it is one of the most difficult things for a person to go through. Right? You don't have a spouse. Okay, even if you're religious and you believe, well, one day the dead will be resurrected, but that doesn't make tomorrow any easier. Right? And, I've been used to so many years with this person, and now in one fell swoop, 50 years of being together with another person has changed. It's very difficult, and everybody understands this. You know, Rav Soloveitchik told a story. Now, you're not going to have anybody with a greater mind than Rav Soloveitchik around. He is as sharp mentally as any human being on the planet was. So he told his students once that one day he remembers that when his wife was sick, so she was so sick, she couldn't sleep upstairs in the bedroom. So she'd have to sleep down in the den. They made a makeshift bedroom in the den. And then he remembers one night he got up and he realized it was chilly and the window was probably open. So he went into the den to close the window for his wife. And after he closed the window for his wife, he looked in the bed and saw that his wife wasn't there because she had died 2 weeks ago. Okay? What does that say? You know, that no matter how intelligent Rav Soloveitchik was, and he certainly intellectually knew he is no longer married, but emotionally he still lived as a married person. Now the point we're trying to make is the transition is very hard. It is probably one of the most difficult transitions in life is to lose your lifelong partner because it's like a part of you is gone. And no matter what the children say, unless they didn't love each other, then it's not a problem. She remarries quickly and goes to Las Vegas with the new guy and, you know, forget about it all, right? But otherwise, you know, but if you really love the person, it's devastating. And quite often you can't recover for a long, long time. Nothing can make it better. So he's saying like this. He's saying, when the soul and the body, when you're alive, they're both together. One day the person dies. Now, that relationship with the body and soul, it's like a marriage. The body and soul have been married together for a long time. That separation is going to be very painful, and let's explain why. See, if you identify your whole life as a body, okay, if that's what you're identifying, and when you die, and all of a sudden the soul leaves the body, how do you feel now? You feel that you have no identity at all. Your identity has been taken away from you. Because what is it you've been identifying with? Your body. Your body's been eating. Your body's been having a good time. Your body's been doing this. Your body's been doing that. That's who you are. And I also have a soul. Now when you're dead, the body is going into the ground. That's it, finished. And all of a sudden, that which you were, it's gone. So what are you now? You're that soul that you're totally not identified with. You know there's something called identity theft, right? They go into your credit card account and they steal your identity, and you can't get yourself back. They say, sorry, somebody else is you. And you just can't get yourself out. Well, that really is what's going on over here. At the time that the soul leaves the body, if you haven't identified with the soul, and you're not used to identifying with the soul, and the body's with what you are identifying with, and now you don't have it, so it is who kemo adam shalachos, like a person that they took everything away from you. Do you understand what's going on? You know, it's how about you know, you were at a job for 30 years, and all you know to do is that job, and then you get fired, and you didn't do anything else in life. You were a workaholic. You didn't develop a relationship with your family, so you never really had a relationship with your spouse. You didn't have a relationship with your kids, but everything was the job. Then all of a sudden you lost the job, and that whole industry has closed. So now what are you? You're nothing. You're nothing. Because I don't know how to do anything else but do that. And that doesn't exist anymore. And everything else, I haven't nurtured and developed. I don't even know what it means to talk to my kids. I don't even know what the pleasure of raising a child is like. So now the person says, I have no identity. Okay, can you imagine how painful that is? All right. Can you imagine how painful it would be if the person you've been living with for 30, 40, 50 years that you really loved all of a sudden is gone and is not going to be replaced? So he says, this gives you a little inkling of how you're going to feel on the day of death. And he says, this is called the chibut hakever. This is the beating of the grave. Besides all the scary mystical stuff, he says, this chibur hakever is the soulful recognition of the person that his whole reality is finished and he has no substitution. He has no substitution at all. It's hello? Am I with you guys today? It's awfully quiet. I don't know. You following? Or you're just thinking a lot, right? All right? But you understand? If all day long you're thinking like a body, all day long, you're rushing. I'm hungry, I have to eat. I have to do this. It's all body, 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 body. Oh, I got a soul. Okay, I got a soul. I believe you have a soul, but I don't really feel it yet. And then all of a sudden, it's body's finished. So then, what are you? What am I? And there is a tremendous anxiety that the human being goes through now because everything identified is being munched on by the worms. And now they're telling you, well, you really were a soul. Says, well, I don't know what that is. I have no idea what that is. So you have a tremendous identity crisis. And every human being will go through this if you identify as a body. It's inevitable that you're going to go through this crisis. And this crisis is worse than any crisis in this world. It's harder than changing jobs, harder than moving, harder than getting divorced. This upheaval is so great because you're so connected to this world and this body, you have not yet learned to appreciate that you even have a soul. That is the frightening aspect of the day of death. And in a minute you're going to say, so I'll worry about it when I get to it. First of all, that's not a wise thing to do. It seems that everybody's very worried about their retirement. Did you ever notice? They're very worried about their retirement. Why? What do you mean, why? When I retired, I better have a way of taking care of myself. Well, retirement only lasts maybe 10, 15, 20 years. Now, what about when you really retire? Okay, what do you got saved up for that? And more than that, how are you going to feel at that point in time? You're not going to know what you're feeling like because you got to change the identity, but you don't have any identity anymore. Yeah? Yeah.
Saying that in death, the soul has a perception of its death. Is it lingering in the ground, hovering above the ground? You just can't leave it like the elephant, just sort of, you know, fairy.
The soul is going up to heaven.
All right, so if it's in heaven, together. What's perception with this, you know, earth centered?
It's not it. There's the you. There's the you.
What is the you? Is the you perception?
The you. Okay, so we've said in the past. What is the you? Nope. Well, not exactly. Nope. Nope. That's not the you. What's the you? What are you? What are you? No! You're not a body and soul. No! That's not true.
Why not?
Who made the soul? Hashem. Did you make it? No. So that's not yours. That's not you. You a body? No. Who made the body? God made the body. What are you? What did you do? Did you make your soul? Did you make your soul? No, you didn't. Do you remember making it? Like a hammer and nail? And you made the soul? No. Did you make the body? No. They're both gifts. God gave you a body. He took a body, took a soul, put it together. Together, this entity that has a body and a soul is called what? The chooser. You are the chooser. That's what you are. You are the chooser. The Torah says it. The Torah says at the end of Deuteronomy, it says, "Before I've given here, I've given before you good and bad, life and death. Choose life." God's saying, "Choose life. Choose it." So here you have a body. You have a soul. Now, who is the you? The you is the miraculous creation of a human being that has a body and a soul together. What? Yeah.
But you are the deeds that you're doing.
Oh, wonderful. You are the deeds that you do. But why did you do what you did? That's not, no, that's not how it is. It's,
you chose
to do it. Right? Didn't you choose? You chose to eat a pizza tonight? Or you chose to give charity tonight? But the deeds that you just don't do deeds on automatic. You have to choose what you do. Don't you?
Rabbi, ah. You are the expression of your free will.
That's what it is. That you are the chooser. You are the chooser. So what are you? You are the chooser. That's what you are. You are the chooser. And that part of you is the you. That's the part of you that's the you. The soul isn't you. God gave you that soul. The body isn't yours. God gave you the body. Those are loners. So loners. You got a body and then you got a soul. And now you have to choose which one you identify with. Right, this is the miraculous reality of the human being. And you only have 80 years to make this choice. And then what you've chosen is what you got. Is what you got. So if you chose to be a body, did you get fooled? Did you get fooled? Because at the end of the 80 years, look what you chose. There it is. Sitting and rotting in the ground. And that's your reality. That's finished. Oh, what did I do that for? Wait a minute. What about the soul? What about the soul? I don't even know what it is. It's not like, give me this one now. Wait a minute. You don't even know what it is. You don't even relate to it. You never identified with it once in your life. So what happens is, you don't have any reality anymore. You have nothing to identify with. That moment of truth is the most excruciating moment in the human being's life. The pain in that is indescribable. And that is what the mystics describe as what happens upon a human being's death. Because you've wrongly... Now, we don't mean to say you can't have a body. But it's a big difference in saying I identify with my soul than if I identify with my body. Do you understand what the difference is if you identify with your soul? What happens when you die then? How painful is it?
It's not.
It's not painful. Do you understand? Why? Because the soul is going to be forever. And that's the thing you identified with your whole life. And now, just like you get rid of your dirty clothes at the end of the night, you got rid of your dirty, old, sagging, 80-year-old clothes. And now you are, we'll see in a minute, you're going to put on a new set of clothes. We'll see in a minute what that is. All right? But that is who we are. These choices that we identify with. Yeah?
I'm just having trouble. I think most of us here, being here, just indicates that we're not as banal as to say that we heed to our every physical inclination, right? That obviously some of us have a sort of an intuition or something that guides us to places such as this, right?
Right. I agree. But we're trying to find out where it's at.
And it's hard to conceptualize what you mean by soul because we're contained in this klipa, right? And so this, we experience the world through this klipa of ours, our skin, our body. And whether we identify with soul or body, a part of us still ends in the same place.
Right.
Right? So it's just, it's hard to differentiate between the two in terms of, I think most of us are probably both. Right?
No, you think you're both. You wish you're both. But you identify primarily with the body. Because you really don't know what it means to identify with a soul, because no one's taught you how. But you heard it's a good thing. You heard that spiritual people are spiritual. So spiritual is supposed to be a good thing, so spiritual, I connect with the spiritual. So how does that translate into a feeling? How does that translate into reality? Right? If that was so true, like, why aren't you thrilled when Shabbos comes? I mean, thrilled. No, I mean, it's a real thing. It's a real thing. Right? And that's not happening. So in other words, we're told that we're supposed to be this way, and it's halavai, I wish I would feel this way, and you want to feel this way because you've heard enough classes from me to say it's important, right? And you've realized maybe, you know, the body hasn't given me such a great time, so there's got to be something else. But like, what is it? I'm still not sure what it is. And that's fine. You don't have to know what it is today. But what he's trying to tell us is get to the understanding that you got to stop identifying your existence with this body alone. Doesn't mean to say you don't eat and sleep and do these other things, but it's done under the direction of the soul and not under the direction of the body. And it certainly is meant to work together. But the question is, what am I identifying with? That's the point. What am I identifying with? A single guy goes out for dinner also, but he has to go out to dinner with his wife and not with his friends. You see? And that's the different identification that's going on. So yeah, that's what the issue here is. What are you really identifying with? What do you feel? And what is it supposed to feel like? Or you just say, well, I think I'm doing a spiritual thing, but what? How do you know you are? You know, what are the things that upset you in life? You know, are you upset that you forgot to daven mincha? That's a spiritual thing, but we're all upset when we don't eat lunch. Don't eat lunch. My stomach is killing me. Well, because I identify with my body. Now, if you were really identifying with your soul, if you missed doing a mitzvah, you'd be aching. Why aren't you aching if you're so spiritual? Okay, I didn't daven mincha today. Big deal. I forgot to say a bracha. I didn't put on tefillin today. It's like, well, but that's all the spiritual stuff that's there. Right? When you stub your toe, you feel it, right? It hurts because you identify with your foot's feelings. All right? How about when your soul is hurting? Do you feel it? Do you really feel terrible when you're talking Lashon Hara? Do you feel dirty, disgusting, and grimy when you're talking Lashon Hara? Or no, I felt really great putting down that guy. Really, really enjoyed that. Got a lot of pleasure in doing that, right? So then, you know, then you're not identifying with the soul. And naturally, we will naturally, and let's be honest, most of us are identifying with their bodies. We know that the soul is the right place to identify with, but the day-to-day activities, you know, belie what we're thinking of what we should be at philosophically. Right? You could say the right words, but is it really you? And is that really what you're identifying with?
Well, I think to be an observant Jew implies that there's a fundamental sense of spirituality.
It's a fundamental understanding of spirituality, not a sense. There's a big difference. I know that I'm supposed to be spiritual. Because that's what it says. But I don't feel it. That's the whole point of the book. The whole point of the book, and that's where doing the mitzvahs becomes a drag, because I don't feel good doing it. Now maybe, that's what I talked about last week. Maybe the Baal Tshuva the first few times feels good doing, because it's a lark, it's a new experience. It's the native experience, you know. Someone that does Shabbos once, that's cute, man. That really is interesting. And those candles are cute, and the challah tastes good, and, you know, and it's nice being with a family where people aren't fighting with each other. You know, but that isn't really Shabbos. That's the body part of Shabbos. And could be many people fall hook, line, and sinker for the body part of Shabbos. And maybe when we're trying to reach out to people, maybe that's the part that gets them. But that's not the part that's going to sustain them. And you can always tell one person's been a Baal Tshuva for a while. Because once they become they become mainstream, then they sleep in and come late to shul and talk during davening, do all the other things that nice Orthodox Jews do. Right? Because that's the body part of the religion. Right? So, but I'm saying, since you're all coming to class, it means you know there's got to be more. And you're of a select group of people who are saying, I'm not afraid to find out what we're going to find out in the coming weeks. Right? But the point we're trying to make here is a concept of identifying. To be honest, what do you really identify? You can know it by the words you say to yourself. Do you say, right? Okay, guys, Marv is in 10 minutes. I can't wait for Marv to come. Oh, I've been waiting all afternoon. I want to daven Marv. Or, I have to daven Marv. You hear the difference? You hear the difference? I have to daven Marv because I'm a Jew. I'm an Orthodox Jew. I have to daven Marv. What are you talking about? If I don't daven Marv, it's a big sin. Huh, I have to do it. I want to daven Marv. Now, come, be honest. What do you enjoy more? Biting into a Marv sandwich? or the kosher Subway that they're opening up down south? You know? Or rumored to open down south, right? Come, be honest. What do you look forward to the whole day? Oh, I'm looking forward to it. My wife said she's going to make an amazing pizza. That, like the Sicilian kind, you know? Or whatever they do in Sicily, right? But that you could tell where you identify with. I can give you a quiz. I can make you write 10 sentences. And listen carefully when you say, I want, or I should, or I need to. You know? When was the last time you said, I'm really excited about Shabbos. I've been thinking about it all week. I'm just dying for Shabbos to come. Or, you got tickets to a Maple Leaf Game 7 Stanley Cup game. Whoa, I really want to see that game. You know? And you know it, and you can't fool yourself, because if you really wanted Shabbos to come, you would have brought it in an hour and a half early, wouldn't you? Why'd you wait till it says 8:38? Well, I got so many more things to do, I got another 2 hours, why should I waste that? What do you mean, if you love Shabbos, you would have brought it, you know you're allowed to bring in Shabbos an hour and a half before Shabbos. I love it so much. You go on vacation, do you wait for the last minute to go on vacation? Well, you don't want to. But you, sometimes you, and you're, oh, I wish I could start earlier. Well, why? Because I want to go on the vacation. Do you ever say, I have to go on a vacation? Oh, I have to go on vacation. I have to go to Florida. Oh, what a drag. You know, went to Florida last year, I go to Florida this year. You know, I have to check into a hotel, I have to check into the sauna. Nobody says that. I want it. I'm excited about it, right? Because the body is saying I want it. Right? Now if the soul, if you're connected to the soul, then all these soulful things that you're so connected to, you want to do this. Do you understand the difference? You know, when you're finishing the Amida, you go, oh, I wish I could be doing the Amida another 10 minutes. How can I? Oh, but what can I do? I have to go to work. I have to go to work. I don't want to get fired. It'd be a big problem. Hey, Nebuch, okay, reluctantly, God, I'll talk to you later. You know, come on, when's the last time you did that? As opposed to, whew, that was pretty good, a 4-minute shot. Shimon Esrei, that was good. I'm going to be on time now to make it downtown. Right? So it's like you're doing this spiritual thing, but you're not identifying with it. You're paying your dues, but you're not identifying with it. You understand? So that's what he's saying. So what he's saying is the Orthodox Jew, this is what it's so... It doesn't matter if you're the secular Jew, if you're the Orthodox Jew, you can still both identify with the physical the same way and not identify with the neshama in the same way. In the same way. That's what he's saying. And quite often people don't you identify with the body. He says, there's no greater pain than seeing your identity melt before your eyes. Everything that got you excited was focused on the body and you see it rotting away and now you're lost. That whole thing you invested a lifetime into, there's nothing there. Right? So then, but on the other hand, if a person is identifying with his soul, right? So I don't know where you're at in the English. I'm just jumping around here. He says, a person identifies himself as a soul that's in a body. It's on page 5, the middle paragraph. Right? That's enclosed in a body. Neshama sheish la levusha nikra guf, a body that has a garment called a body. Talicha mishishlo, the process of death. It's like taking off an old coat and putting on a new coat. Right? What's the old coat? The body. When the person leaves the world, listen what the mystics say. They put on clothing, but not clothing that's called a body, but rather it's a different kind of clothing. It's called the kasonas, or the clothing of light. The same clothing of light that first man had. Now, it's interesting, the first man, the rabbis tell us, did not have flesh. First man had a translucent body. Had a translucent body. More like a fingernail body. And what happened? The light of the neshama radiated through the body. Adam looked at his hand, he saw the neshama pulsating with light. That was or. You spell this word or, aleph vav resh is light, and or, ayin vav resh is flesh. So after he sinned, God gave him garments of flesh. Before he sinned, he had a garment of light. Right? The neshama was filled with light, and first man before he sinned was connected to the light. Once he sinned, he identified with the body. So God said, I'll give you a body that looks more like a body, and you won't be able to see your soul so easily anymore. When you die, then that old garment, you throw that one out, you put it in the earth, and then the new one is the translucent model. You're putting on a fresh, doesn't everybody like putting on a fresh suit, brand new suit? So guess what you look forward to when you die? You get a brand new suit. When you were born, you had a birthday suit. The birthday suit lasted you 70, 80, 90 years, and it started getting looking decrepit looking and wrinkly and spotted and this and that's, yuck, you know, it's an old prune at 106. You know, then you know, it's an old worn beat up body. It's an old beat up suit, you know, with some patches over here and some mothballs over here, you know, mothballs. You know, it's okay, you know, Baruch Hashem, I'm finished. Now I'm gonna put on a brand new suit. Gonna put on my death suit or my new birthday suit. Well, that's a cause for a great celebration. You ever wonder why people make jokes about death? Do you ever notice comedians make a lot of jokes about death? Why? Right, because what do we joke about most? The things that we fear most. That's why I make jokes about marriage too, right? So, but it's the same because really there's an inherent fear about death. So he says, so who is the death process difficult for? Only the one who identified with the body. You know, let me give you a story. A true story. Maybe this will make it clear. So there once was Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld. He was a great rabbi. He passed away a few years ago. He was a big rabbi in Kiruv, and he had a yeshiva in Muncie. So he relates when he was a young fellow, and he learned in a yeshiva where Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner, of blessed memory, was the mashkiach over there. And, you know, the boys lived out of town and went to the yeshiva, so they billet them out for Shabbos to go to different rabbis' houses. So happened to be one real scholar, the guy was a genius. You can go up to him any place in the Talmud and ask him a question, answer on the spot. Unbelievable. But he was didn't have a lot of friends, lonely kind of fellow. He was married, but lonely kind of fellow. And Rav Huttner would not recommend boys to go to this rabbi's house for lunch. Anyway, Rabbi Fry, a couple boys, says, you know, he's such a big scholar, let's get ourselves invited out to his house for lunch. So Rav Huttner didn't want to, says, okay, if you want to really go, you know. Anyway, so Rabbi Freifeld, when he's a young fellow, and he has a couple guys that go to this rabbi's house for lunch, a Friday night dinner, whatever. So he makes Kiddush, and they have a wonderful meal, and they sing Zmiros, and the rabbi says Torah. It's amazing, having a great time. Then it's towards the end of the meal, and he lights back, and he tells his dear wife, to get him his favorite beer. It seems every Friday night he would partake of having a beer. That's his Onik Shabbos, to have a good beer. I guess a certain brand of beer that you get in a certain store. So then the wife kind of says, oh, it was really a busy Shabbos, and I forgot the beer. And like all of a sudden, this rabbi, he turns into a monster. So he says, what? Where's my beer? My whole Shabbos is my beer. And he whams, hits the table. Whoa! And the candles go flying off the table. He says, yelling at his wife, where you got my beer? So these bachim were there, are like. So they quietly benched themselves and left. And they said, now we understand why the Rosh Yeshiva didn't recommend boys to go there. Now, this is not your typical rabbi, I hope. But the point of the story, I mean, and now he slams on the door, he makes the candles go out, so that's desecrating the Shabbos, embarrasses his wife, which is even a bigger sin. But what's the problem? Because for him, the beer was what he really connected to. So you could even be an Orthodox rabbi. But the truth is, you identify with your body, and maybe all the Talmud learning was just the mental stimulation that he was physically connecting to, but not to his soul that he wasn't connecting to. Right? So that's the problem. So he's saying, we all are going to have to make this transition in life. And he says, here's your choice. We will have to make this transition from identifying with a body to identifying a soul. There's no way out. Just like death, taxes, transition to being a soul. And they're going to tell you, oh, you're so lucky now. You now are going to be with a soul. And you're going to say, I don't even know what it is. I don't even know how to use it. I don't even know its telephone number. I don't know nothing about it. And you know, it's just when you die, it doesn't all of a sudden get better. And all these dreams that, oh, if it's a good boy, then I go to Olam Haba and I go to my soul. What if you didn't identify with your soul in your life? You don't automatically identify with your soul after you die. There's a very painful process that's necessary to get you to be able to identify with the soul. It's one of the most painful processes because you've lost your identity and now you're forced to take on a new identity that you don't even understand, you don't even care about. So the tzaddik says, I'll tell you what, everyone's going to have to make the transition. Would you rather make it in your lifetime and do it slowly in a pleasant way? Or you want to wait till the day you die and have it come in a very shocking way? So that's where we're up to right now, because I've got a daf marav now. Right? Now, I'll leave you with this thought, and that is, so you'll say, so what? So I'll worry about it when I die. Let me enjoy life now. Okay, I hear what you're saying. So when I'm 85, I'll suffer the consequences. But right now, why can't I enjoy my life now? So we'll see. That's the last part we didn't get to in the sheet. So you'll see why that's not an option. That's not an option at all. And therefore, the tzaddik is suggesting it's a lot better to learn to make this identity change sooner than later. Because when you do it when you're alive, you can do it gradual, without pain. And once you identify with the soul, there's going to be a lot of benefits that we'll talk about next week. And then when you die, it will be painless. It will be painless. And the transition will be like taking off one garment and putting on another garment. All right. So that's what he means by saying, I want to give you a better life. Last week. I want to give you a better life. The better life is identifying with the soul. The not better life is identifying with the body. We'll talk more about it next week, God willing. We'll hope to see you all next week. Okay? Whoa, an hour and a half. That was way too long. Oh, wait, before you leave. I seriously...